everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go.
Well, hey there, welcome to Chase Oaks. It has been an amazing night or day or whatever you're at. This is incredible. I mean, I lost track at about 20 baptisms that were taking place here in our legacy campus. And I know from whatever room you're watching or if you're watching online right now, I hope you're inspired like I am by just seeing life change in the moment. It's just so cool that people would take a risk step of getting in a bunch of water in front of a bunch of strangers because of just how much Jesus has done in their life. So it's just been such a great day together. And I'm excited about what we're gonna do here as we close out a series called Simplify, which Simplify has been all about living a life that is full of purpose, clarity, focus, precision, which all sounds really, really nice until you and I try to actually live in the real world, because the real world is quite complex. And in fact, I don't think that's a newsflash to any of us right now, but it would be great if we would have a life situations where there was an easy answer or a simple path to choose, and yet so often we are faced with complicated situations where it's hard to know what decision to make or what to do in the moment. And to help us think about that, I actually want to share about a situation that I ran into about 15 years ago. And as I share this situation, I want to ask you, just in your mind, like, well, what would you have done if you were me in this moment? And we'll take a poll on this because I'm betting it's going to be 50-50. So 15 years ago, I had just gotten married. I didn't have a lot of money. And Amy and I were both driving beaten down cars. My car was a 1996 Dodge Intrepid. In fact, I think we have a picture of one of them right here. My dad loved this car. This is who I got this car from. And he was very generous with me because he loved it. He said, hey, this is a sporty car. It's a sleek car. In fact, it kind of looked, if you remember these kind of cars, it was teal, which was like really in at that point, I guess. And it looked a little like a spaceship, like from the back, it almost had these kind of Star Trek things on there. And he thought it looked really cool. So for him to give it to me, that was a big step. And he was really generous with how much, like he gave me a great deal on it and everything. So he loved that car, but I had a love-hate relationship with it because as I got it, it wasn't 1996. It was closer to 2010. And it looked nothing like the picture that we just showed on our screens. It was a lot more beaten down. And by that point, it had gone through life. Let me just tell you, like it was a struggle. And one of the struggles it had is that it constantly overheated. And so I had to repair the radiator several times over and over again until at some point, it just wasn't worth it anymore. You know, it was just like, and Amy and I had been saving up to purchase new cars, and we were just finishing up grad school. And so I knew I just had to make this car kind of last for just a few more months, and then we would be good to go. And so I actually counted out, like when I would drive the car without fixing the radiator, that it would take, I had about 10 minutes of drive time before the car would start to steam and overheat. And so I learned that our apartment was about 10 minutes away from a DART rail station that I could then get to and then go down to school, which was downtown. And so, you know, I would get into the car in the morning and turn on the engine and then pray for every green light to, you know, hit on the way there until I pull into the parking lot with a little bit of steam. Super classy, let me tell you. It's just not any better than that. Well, one day, we actually were able to purchase a new car. Some of you may remember this. There was a program that was called Cars for Clunkers. Does anybody remember this program? So Cars for Clunkers was designed to get cars like my Intrepid off the road. It was trying to say, hey, there's these cars. They're polluting and all that stuff. They're not good. So they actually gave quite a good stipend to people like me to be able to get a car. So we purchased a car from a dealership that was newer, but it was about 35 minutes away from our apartment. And so we get into the car and start driving. That was probably mistake number one. And when we're on the way, because here is an important note. The way that it would qualify for Cars for Clunkers is you couldn't tow the car there. because they wanted to get cars that were running off the road, not your old beaten down one that was sitting in front of your yard for a long time. They wanted running cars. So you had to be driving the car there. So we're on the road, we're driving up I-35. We're about 10 minutes still away from the dealership and the car is running hot, like really hot. Like the gauge is like going nuts and the steam is up there and I'm trying every trick in the book. Like I'm turning on the heat because that's actually a way to pull, you know, the hot air off of the engine. I've got the windows rolled down. We're just, you know, looking panicky at each other. And in this moment, Amy and I look at each other and we say, what are we gonna do? Because in that moment, we could pull the car over and turn the car off, knowing that it would take at least a day for this car to cool down. Uber wasn't as much of a thing at this point of time, so we didn't know how we'd get home exactly. And there was no guarantee that the car would start up the next day. Or we could push through and try to make it 10 minutes more to the dealership. So a quick poll across any room. If you're online, I'd love to. How many of you would have pulled over the car in that moment? Okay. How many of you would have pushed through and tried to go through there? All right, you guys are crazy, by the way. That's awesome. I mean, the people that are raising their hand are like, yeah, I mean, I guess you all wanna die. I mean, that's wonderful. I'm happy for you. I will tell you what we did in a moment. Because the reason why I brought up this story is it's an example of a challenging situation where in the moment, we had to decide, are we gonna press forward and speed up, or are we gonna slow down? Are we gonna pull over or are we gonna push through? It's what I call the problem of pacing. And it's a problem that you and I run into quite a bit in life. I mean, certainly we run into when it comes to driving. I think we all have an idea of what pace someone else should drive on the road, and our pace is the right pace and someone else's pace is not the right pace. So I think we all know that. But I think we also know that it's beyond just driving on the road too. That it comes into situations in our life where we have critical moments and we have to decide in this moment, am I gonna go forward and speed up or am I gonna slow down in life? Like some of us right now are facing a pretty interesting decision, maybe with our business, where you have a business opportunity that's facing you right now, where you have an opportunity of a lifetime to move your career forward in a way that you've been hoping for and praying for. And yet in that moment, you know, if you make that decision, it means that you'll be less present at home for a bit. Or maybe it's an education decision. I face this, I know many of you have faced this, that for you to get to where you wanted to go in life meant that you would have to potentially take a season where you would go to school or go back to school and know that you would live a less than balanced life for a period of time, which is hard to know, hey, if this is the right thing to do. And sometimes there are moments that cause us to want to speed up, but there are also other moments that are asking for us to actually slow down, and we're trying to figure out if that's the right thing to do as well. Maybe it could be caring for an aging parent, or you have young kids at home, or you're dealing with some kind of health issue or challenge in your life, and it's pulling you back from pushing forward on some big dreams and hopes that you have in your life. It's the problem of pacing. And so what I want to talk about for a few minutes today is how do we navigate that problem? Like when you come to a challenging situation, you're trying to figure out, do I push forward or do I pull back? What do I do with that? And just a front kind of note that I want to make is that I don't have any regards of that I'll be able to say in 30 minutes, you know, this is how you should handle this complicated situation in your life, because each of these are complicated. But what I would like to propose is a simple prayer, a prayer that I've found to be helpful to me as I've been navigating this, and as God often does in our life, especially in my life when I'm called up to speak and do something on this, that I'm often navigating the same kind of stuff over and over again. And I found this prayer to actually be really, really helpful to me as I've tried to figure out how to best move forward in this situation. And the reason why it's a prayer, I think, is also significant. Because a prayer is something that I've found that at the end of the day, and maybe you've done this as well in your life, where you're kind of sitting in your bed and you're trying to fall asleep and you have this back and forth in your brain of like, okay, I did too much, or I didn't do enough, or I pushed too hard, or I didn't push hard enough. That in this moment, it's been helpful to me to have something that I can say, okay, God, help me in this moment. Or maybe in the morning, I've found this as well. that sometimes I'm about to get out of bed and I'm like, okay, I'm thinking of the calendar of my day and all the different things and choices that I need to make, that at the same time of being both overwhelmed by all the obligations, I've also felt kind of over it too. And I found that this prayer is helpful. So this prayer is a combination of two different psalms in the Bible. Psalms were Old Testament spiritual hymns. Many of them were written by a king named David in the Old Testament. He was a big key leader in the nation of Israel. But today's psalm is actually not written by David, at least the one we'll be primarily in. It is the only psalm that we have in the book that was written by Moses. And Moses was a key figure as well in the Old Testament. Moses also, this is significant, is that most scholars think this psalm that we are about to look at was written towards the end of his life. They think that this was after he had gone through a whole bunch of ups and downs and back and forths in his life. And he had quite a bit. I mean, if you know the story of Moses, and I know some of us may not, but if we're aware of it, that Moses was somebody that through kind of a miraculous intervention of God's hand, he had wound up from as a baby in Pharaoh's household, the leader of Egypt, and he was raised in that and had a lot of power and a lot of intense period of his life. And then in a moment that I don't have time to get into, he had to flee Pharaoh's household and run out to the wilderness, to the desert for 40 years, which is a long time. I'm 41, so the duration of me was how long Moses was out in the wilderness in relative obscurity. And during that time, there was a lot of slow in his life. And then in a key moment, God shows up in a burning bush. And in that burning bush, he says, okay, Moses, I'm calling you out to go back into Egypt, and I'm going to use you to, you know, let my people go. You know, we all maybe know the movie and all that, that he would use them through some plagues and big interventions. It was an intense period of life that God would use Moses to say, okay, we're going to free God's people. So again, a really intense season followed by Moses leading the people through the wilderness. And because of their sin and disobedience, it winds up being a long season of 40 years out in the wilderness again. Again, a ton of back and forth in their life. And so Moses is a great person to ask perspective on as he reflects on all of this. And this is where we join in Psalm 90. It says this. This is Moses speaking. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. I feel like I need like an echo when I say that. Return to dust. I don't have the voice for that. You could put in Morgan Freeman's voice or something in there that sounds better than that. But return to dust, you mortals. 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. You know, Moses is probably the perfect person to ask when it comes to having a perspective about the greatness of God. Like, no one else probably on earth or in history has had just the amount of exposure that this man had when it came to knowing just the magnificence, the greatness of who God is. I mean, there's a key part even in the Exodus journey, and they're in this 40 years of wandering where Moses asks God, he has this close relationship with him. He asks God, hey, show me your glory. And God says, hey, okay, I'll show you my glory. I'll do that. But the only way that that's possible is, you know, I'm going to literally put you in a crevice in a rock and kind of have you turn away, and I'll pass by. And in that moment, I'm going to shield you as much as I can, because if you get any more exposure to who I am, you won't be able to handle it. And so it's in that perspective and probably that moment that Moses is thinking of when he writes these very words, that he's thinking that God is so above everything that he's ever faced. It's so other than any other category that can come to his mind. And that perspective is helpful to you and us today too. That as we think of all the issues and challenges and chaos of the world that you're facing, and I don't know what issues you have in your life or what stresses you have in your life, but the key part that comes to my mind that I need to remember is that God is not stressed. He is not worried. He's not hand-wringing and wondering what's going on. He is above all of it, and he sees it from, as the words of Moses, from everlasting all the way here, from eternity past all the way to everlasting to eternity future, that God is above all of that. And as we as people kind of in this one moment approach this holy God, like that's the perspective that Moses had, that God is calling us to. And I find it fascinating that as Moses is reflecting on this, he says that even though God is this other being that is so much bigger than him, that he says we can come to God as our refuge, that he is our place of security, he's our place of strength, and that's his heartbeat, that when you think of this holy God, that you would think, okay, he just wants me to turn away, but instead his heartbeat is like, guys, come to me. Like, I'm a place of safety. I'm here for you. And so as Moses is reflecting on that bigness of God and kind of the smallness of him, he writes these words. He continues in the psalm. He says, our days may come to 70 years or 80, maybe 90 or 100 if you do cold plunges, organic food, you know, all that stuff. Though I know, I mean, maybe you know someone too that is 90 that has smoked, you know, pretty much their whole life. So who knows, you know? We never know. And that's Moses' point, is that he's saying that, hey, if our strength endures, like we really don't know. No matter what it is, our days are still limited. And then he adds this happy thought for a Valentine's Day weekend. He says, yet the best of these days are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. And what he's saying here, and I don't think this is a shocker to any of us, is that like life is full of chaos. And some of that chaos is because we live in a broken world. And some of that chaos is because I'm broken myself. And Moses knew all of that firsthand. He had wrestled with all that firsthand. And so in light of all these things, he asked God to do something important, something that I think is helpful to you and I today too. He says, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. And this is so significant here. And don't miss this. He is saying that the key to having more wisdom, which we all want in our life, like we all want insight and perspective. You're looking for wisdom each and every day of what to do and where to move and what decision to make. He's saying the key to having more of that is actually having a better grasp of our limited perspective, our limited capacity. The way he words that is to say, to remember that our days are numbered. Which I don't think anybody would disagree with that. Like when you hear like our days are numbered, I think all of us say, yeah, well, yeah, of course they are. But most of us don't live each and every day as if they are, though there are a few exceptions. Like for example, one time that I would know that days are numbered, this is a happy example, is on vacation. I remember the last, a few years ago, I had the opportunity to go to Hawaii, which is amazing. And so we go to Hawaii and we knew we were gonna be there for just a week. And so I remember you get off the plane, you feel that Pacific wind kind of coming off the ocean. They put a lei around your neck, you know, at that point, maybe a nice drink. And at that point, I remember that there was a tick, 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 tick in my head that just started going off because it started to say that, okay, time's a-wasting right now, and there's only so much time you're gonna be here in this amazing place. And the problem was that we were in this large group of people, like a big like travel group, and in that travel group, they all, for some reason, made the decision that the first thing we were gonna do was go to a souvenir shop. And I remember, I'm sitting in the souvenir shop, and I'm probably not being as patient as I should have, though maybe, I don't know, maybe I should have, because I just, in my head, I'm like, we flew all the way here, and we only have this much time here, and you want to spend it where? Like, you want to spend it here in this spot, getting knick-knack, like, we need to get to a beach. If I don't get to a beach in the next hour, that was my perspective, because I could just hear the clock going off in my head. So, again, days were numbered. On a maybe a more serious one, and I think a number of us are in this right now, is when we either face a hard health diagnosis in our life or in the life of somebody that we care about. And it's in those moments where our perspective just changes on a dime. And I think we know this, where it's like, okay, time is precious. There's only so much time I have, and I want to get it right, and I want to spend it right. And it's in those moments then it changes the way that we think about how I'm using my energy or the priorities I'm making in the moment or where I rush to or where I hold back from going. That having a time limitation or an understanding of the limitations that I face changes everything. And the challenge again is that for you and I, we don't normally live like we're on vacation. We don't normally live like we have that diagnosis. Instead, we live as if life is limitless. And there's a couple of ways that this shows up. And again, I found that this actually is different depending on our personalities. And so this is what makes talking about pacing such a challenging issue, is that for some of us, we live as if we have unlimited energy just all the time. Like when you wake up in the morning, you're just ready to dominate. You know, you're like, okay, I'm ready to take this day by storm. Like I'm going hard after everything all the time and it's gonna happen. And I'm gonna make it work and all that. And I think what Moses would say, if we're in that category, if we're kind of that type A, like let's dominate all this stuff, he would say, dude, I mean, he may not say dude, but he'd say, dude, your time is limited. And that a lot of the things that, or your energy is limited, and that a lot of the things that you're using your energy on and spending it on, like maybe in the grand scheme of things, in light of all of eternity, when you look at it, it's like, is that really gonna count for what I'm hoping it would count for? Or would it be, in the words of Moses, dust? Like, would it just disappear? And that in light of my limited energy, what is it that I actually want to use it for that's most worthwhile? I think he would say that's one challenge that we face. On the other hand of this, and this is probably more my personality, is that for some of us, we struggle with thinking that time is unlimited. And here's what I mean by this, that some of us think that it's like, hey, I can get to that goal tomorrow, I can get to that goal next week, I can get to that goal next year. In a sense, it's sort of a complacency attitude that's like, hey, I've got all the time in the world. Like, I mean, we'll get to it. Like, what's your rush? And I think what Moses would say to us, if that's kind of our personality, is like, dude, your time, it's limited. That we don't know how many days we have left on the calendar. We don't know all the time that we've been given. And so maybe it's time to have a tick, 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 tick in our head and say, it's time to get off the couch. And it's time to move forward and press forward because our time is limited. And so this is why Moses in this passage, and I love it, is that he is pleading with God. Whatever our temptation or challenge or our drawing is, he's pleading with God, God, would you teach us this? Because our natural leaning is not towards thinking that way. And he's saying, God, would you teach me this so that I could have wisdom to know how to use my limitations, whether it's my limited energy or my limited time, to use it in the right way. Whether it's saying I need to jump forward and maybe have more urgency in my life and not this frantic, haphazard, crazy energy, but energy with focus, with priorities, with precision. As he carries that thought, I think of another psalm, and this is Psalm 119, verse 133, and it says this, and this is the second psalm that'll tie into our prayer. And this psalmist says, direct my footsteps according to your word. Let no sin rule over me. We don't know who wrote this psalm. All we know is that this person that wrote it deeply cared about God's word, like about what God had revealed about himself in scripture. And we know he cared about it because he wrote 176 verses in this chapter. It is the single longest chapter in the Bible because he was just so passionate. He's like, God, help center my life around what you revealed. I just want to do it. And so in this verse in particular, he's saying, you know, God, as I think about the very path I'm on, would you align my priorities around something bigger, around what you revealed in your word? I like how the King James Version translates this particular verse. It says, God, would you order my steps today. That in a world that's prone to disorder, would you actually help me fight against that disorder and move into order? And that's scientific, actually. And this is where I'm going to take a bit of a risk here as a pastor. Whenever a pastor starts talking about science, like, there's a reason why we didn't wind up, you know, going into science field stuff, because we're just not very good at it. So some of you that teach this stuff, you're like, please send me an email afterwards and correct all this stuff, because some of this came off of Wikipedia, okay? But there is some science that talks about how our whole environment is prone to disorder. And this is where I'm going to sound kind of maybe potentially stupid here. There's a concept called entropy. Am I sounding good so far, science people? Okay, good. Entropy is the measure of the state of disorder. Thank you, Wikipedia, for that helpful information. And the idea with entropy is that in a given environment, if left to just anything, like if there's no other force, it's just natural, that entropy will increase in any environment. So, like, example is your garden that, you know, it takes work to weed, you know, and you could clear out your flower bed as best as you can, but if you leave it alone, entropy will increase, meaning weeds will increase. Or the second law of thermodynamics. Are you impressed? That's pretty good, right? All right, well, if I get this right. The second law of thermodynamics is all about heat, and it's saying that heat, which is a concentration of energy, that heat will not stay concentrated, that over time it will dissipate into disorder. That's why your cup of coffee does not stay hot over the period of time. It's the law of second law of thermodynamics. And so, kids, like, if you're watching right now and you're like, hey, my room is messy, and you have a parent or somebody that comes in and says, you know, why is your room not clean? Just drop entropy or second law of thermodynamics, you know? Just say it's science. I don't know. Like, it's what is going on. I can't control it, you know? But the point of all that is that disorder is the default in our world. And so what the psalmist is asking for in this moment is he's saying, God, would you help me push against the chaos of this world? Would you actually enter into this and bring order into the disorder of my life, and actually help align me from the very path I'm on to my priorities to the actual steps I take every single day? Would you align those things and come into my life? And it's asking for those things in our life. Somebody once said, I don't know who it is, I tried to find out, so some of you may know who this was and can tell me after the service. They once said that God has a wonderful plan for your life, and so does everyone else. And the idea is that if we're not super intentional about our priorities, about our pacing, about the path that we're on, there are forces and factors that would love to come into our life and determine those things for us, that would like to set our pace in our life for us. I can't tell you how many times my day has changed dramatically, the pace of my schedule or the pace of my heart rate, because of a urgent text or email from work or a friend or a relative, maybe somebody that doesn't have super high boundaries, and they're not trying to be rude or mean to me, and yet I could feel the entire shift of my day around an outside force that has come in, and that's just the nature of it. And after a while, it can feel a little bit like we're being pushed and pulled in every single direction, kind of like that squirrel that's trying to cross the road of the street, and it's kind of zigzagging back and forth, and newsflash, the squirrel rarely makes it across the street. And so what you and I have the opportunity, I think, today, as we're closing out this series that has been all about clarity and all about purpose, is to say, hey, I want to stop in the middle of that and not be pushed and pulled, but actually take an intentional moment to ask God and invite him into the conversation when it comes to my pacing, when it comes to my priorities. And this brings me to the prayer that has been helpful to me, and I hope it's helpful to you too. And it's simply this. It's a combination of the two passages we've read. It's saying, God, teach me to number my days and order my steps. That essentially what this prayer is saying is it's saying, God, in light of my limitations, my limited capacity, my limited energy, my limited time, would you help me order my priorities for this day and set the pacing that I need to meet those priorities. Essentially, what this prayer is doing is helping us model our lives after Jesus. If you are, you know, were to study the life of Jesus, it's fascinating because Jesus is somebody that was. Sorry, Harold, I just don't want you to start too early. I've got another little bit to go, so just giving you a heads up about that. Harold's great. Can we give Harold a round of applause, by the way? He's great. We're going to come back to that prayer in a moment, so I just didn't want you to get confused by that, Harold. Essentially, what this prayer is doing is having us have a moment where we model our lives after Jesus, and Jesus is a fascinating person to follow because I know many of us believe that he is fully God, that he came into this world, but when he came into this world, he took on humanity. He took on limitations. And by taking on those limitations, it meant that he had only so many hours in the day, that he had only so much time and energy, that he got tired, that he had emotions like you and I do too. And what's fascinating to me is that when you look at then how Jesus prioritized his time, he had to figure that out because he had so many demands on his time of what people would want to do and what they were asking for him to do. You know, Jesus' ministry began when he was 30 years old, at least the main part of his ministry, which meant that between the time that he was born to the time he turned 30 was a relatively slow, obscure part of his life. That his pacing was one of preparation, not necessarily one of intensity. And then when he turns 30, things shift. And you can see this. He was an itinerant preacher. If you read the Gospels, like Jesus is moving from town to town to town to town. And each time you can sense the intensity of his pace. I mean, he definitely would shift things from time to time. He would stop at times to rest. Ryan talked about this last week. Other times he would be interrupted and interruptible by people that would come up. But there are other times where there was more miracles to be done or more things to be taught, and yet he would say, you know what? Given my purpose, given my priorities, it's time to move forward. Like, I'm gonna move on. And that would often confuse people. But really what we see from that, and this is kind of instructive, at least to me, is that Jesus knew when it was time to speed up, when it was time to slow down, when it was time to move on, and when it was time to stop. That he was so connected to the Father, and he was so clear about his purpose, about his priorities, that he would allow that to set his pace accordingly. You know, throughout this series, we have been spending time thinking about our purpose and our priorities. And if you've missed any of that, please go back and take a look. Each of them are really, really helpful. I think what today is an opportunity for us to say, God, in light of my limited capacity, in light of everything that I only have so much to do, in light of my purpose and my priorities, would you help me set the pacing that those priorities require? And that's where the trick is, because there, when you think of then your purpose and your priorities, sometimes there are seasons that are go seasons. Like when you think about it, it's like, okay, God, if I'm gonna get to where you want me to go, then I actually can't stay here anymore. Like there's something that you're calling me to do, and sometimes what you're calling me to do is to take a step into something that is uncomfortable or something that is kind of intense, but it's something that I need to do. In fact, I think most of us can think back on a life in our life where a coach or a trusted friend came into our life and they actually helped us see that we were leaving potential on the table. That there was actually a moment for us to actually press into the discomfort so that we could do something that God wanted us to do and be somebody that God wanted us to become. But the trick with all that is that there are limitations in what that looks like and like how to know when it's a go time and how to know when it's not. It's why I'm so passionate about groups here at our church is that God often speaks and gives us wisdom through other people. And it's great to have a trusted friend in our life when they say, hey, if you're gonna go here, then something's gotta give here and it may not be the right time to go or maybe it is the right time to go. And here's a side note that's important for any of us that are married. Because if we're married and you are making the decision that it's a go season in your life, you cannot make that decision on your own without including your spouse. You just can't. In fact, this brings me back to the story that I started off with at the beginning of today's talk, where Amy and I are in my Dodge Intrepid. We're going down the freeway. The car is steaming and the gauge is off the hook. And I remember looking over at her and I was like, should we go for it? And we looked at it together and we said, we need to go for it. And so we put the pedal down. It's close to lighting on fire. It wasn't, but it, you know, we pull in and we made it in there and we survived. I mean, I guess you figured that out because I'm here today. Funny enough, a year or two later with her beaten down car, we were in the exact same situation again. Maybe that's saying something about who I am and how cheap I am on stuff. I don't know. We were in the same situation though where her car was starting to overheat and we had to get it to the dealership. And in that case, we actually made the decision to pull over at that point. Because given that car's capacity and just knowing it, we're like, hey, we think this is the right thing to do. And the point of that is that our pacing in that moment, and really for anybody that's married, our pacing is tied together. And it has to be a decision that we make together. And that when you make that decision, it is based partly on some big factors, including, okay, what is my current capacity? What is our family's current capacity? And that you can only have a go season for so long. And then it can flame out. Like anybody that's run any kind of a race, they know this, that if you've run like a 5K and you see that person that starts off the 5K as if it's a 100 meter sprint, you're like, you're never gonna make it, dude. And so for some of us, again, go seasons are great, but we have to make those choices. And sometimes, again, we have to say, based on my capacity, it's not a go season, it's actually more of a slow season. And this is where it's hard. Because sometimes a slow season is based on having an honest assessment of my capacity to say, you know what, based on my health or based on level of stress or based on the issues that I'm facing in my life, this is, even though I have these big dreams in my life and things I want to go, that actually there's something that God has for me in this slow that I need to be present for. Sometimes that capacity is not just based on me. Sometimes that capacity is based on somebody else that's in our life too. And this is not the same, to be clear, as letting an outside factor dictate our pacing, that there are people that God has sometimes placed uniquely in your life that when you say, hey, if I'm gonna reflect the radical love of Jesus, and these are the people that are in my life, that maybe, just maybe, what God is calling me to do is to actually slow down. That the most loving thing I can do is to adjust my pace to be at the pace of somebody else. Any of us that are parents of young kids have had to journey through this. I know I've had to journey through this where literally the pace of life slows to a crawl. And yet it's in those moments where saying, okay, God, what is it that you're developing and preparing me in this season? All of this takes wisdom. And this is where, again, we need help from God. We need to ask him to invite him in the conversation. Again, to say, God, teach me to number my days and order my steps. I don't know right now if this is a slow season for you or a go season. I don't know what capacity limitations you're facing right now or the stress that is going on. All I want to do is say, hey, in this moment, instead of us being reactionary, instead of feeling like we're being pushed and pulled in every direction, for us to take time, maybe it's once a day for the next week, to say, God, I'm gonna invite you into the conversation. Would you help me clear the path a bit so that I know, would you bring order to what it is that I'm supposed to do in this very moment? So I'm gonna invite us, wherever you're at, to close our eyes for a moment and just take this to God, because that's what prayer is. And to say, okay, for a moment, just to say, okay, God, how reactionary am I right now? Like if I feel like I'm being pulled all the way around here and there, God, would you help me slow down in this moment and for you to enter in? And then if this is a slow season or a go season, would you just bring that to God right now and say, God, would you, in light of my limited capacity, order my steps. If it's go, would you help me know how to do that with wisdom where maybe there's an end date or I have a key conversation with an important person in my life? If it's slow, would you give me patience? Would you help me to find meaning in each moment, even if it feels a bit mundane? God, would you teach us to number our days and order our steps? We love you, and it's in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen.